any clue how important blue-collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue-collar workers, our lives would cease to exist.
This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast.
Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades and the co-founding member of STAC, the Skilled Trades Advisory Council, and co-founder and CEO of ToolFetch, this is Andrew Brown.
We have Rich Malachy on the show today, CEO of Malachy Parts and Service. You know, I get this from a lot of my content that I put out on LinkedIn and other platforms. There's this misconception that you don't make money in the trades. And it usually comes from the younger generation, whether it's on YouTube, not so much LinkedIn, but a lot on YouTube and also TikTok. And you have somebody in your business, a service tech, making $55 an hour. So how do you debunk that to people who are saying, nah, you can't make money in the trades?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, in the New York City, New Jersey market, there's technicians, you know, up out there doing, you know, $30, $35, $40, $45, $50, $55. I mean, you know, it's one of those things right now where a technician, I think in any trade, really, good plumbers, electricians, you could, if you're really good at what you do, you can write your own ticket. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Trevor Matthews, the refrigeration mentor. He was on our live last week just talking about how he gets to travel the world. You know, he's in international countries. He's talking about hospitals and how they have these blood refrigeration, and they have to make sure that they're, so in essence, they're saving lives. I mean, there's the stigma that you can't make money in the trades is just, it's one of those things that was, I think, beaten down into us, you know, over the years, going back to, you know, before I was around in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and oh, the plumber with the crack, and you don't want to do this. You want to be white collar and make real money. So I think it's all BS today.
And I totally agree with you. And I always push back. It's funny. I always had this, and part of these stickers, if you can see it here, I don't know if it's backwards in the video here, but the title is you do not have to go to college to make a good living. And I list plumber and welder and carpenter. And then I list out what people can make. And people are always kind of baffled, especially kids, of what the potential is of what you can make. And obviously, it depends on your location. Look, if you're not going to hustle and you're not going to be a sponge and you're not going to soak in all that knowledge, well, you might not get to the level that you want to. But
right.
in what you do, obviously, you own your own business. What is a path for an individual that is in a trade or in sort of the food equipment business as a technician to get to that level as like a CEO or business owner?
Yes. I mean, that's a great question. I mean, you know, looking at someone just starting to saying the potentials and the opportunities are endless, right? And I think any real leader or real CEO or someone leading any company would love to have employees and team members around them that are coming for their job, right? I want you to come for my job. That means you're hungry. That means you're ready to work. That means you're ready to, you know, to win every single day, and you're ready to lead other people around you, because that's really what we do in the trades. You know, as the younger guys coming up, it's like it's that saying, each one teach one. I mean, that's really what it is. So I think for anyone in the food equipment sector, you know, if you really, you can be that CEO someday. You can start your own company. And we're actually going to be talking about this on my live in a few weeks, you know, from tech to CEO. And it can happen if that's what you really want. But you have to understand what it takes. You know, like you said, you know, you have to be willing to do the work. You have to be willing to put in early mornings, late nights, weekends. Sorry, the phone stays on. You have to be ready and willing to be there for other people. That's what the trades really is all about. Yes, you need to know how to fix equipment. You need to know how to read schematics. You need to know electrical and plumbing and gas. You need to know all these things. But at the end of the day, it's about people. You have to be there for people. You know, when someone calls my company, you know, we respond. We respond on Easter Sunday, Christmas Day, Thanksgiving Day. 2 in the morning, we have to respond. That's the nature of this beast. And if you do those things and you're willing to put all of that in, you know, 5 years, in my mind, you become really good, almost an expert in the field if you're grinding and you're doing it. You know, you look fast forward 10 years down the line, maybe you say, I want to be a service manager. You come in-house, now you're a service manager. And then you say, you know what, I want to run the whole thing. I want to be the operations. I want to be vice president. I want to be president. If you're going through the motions every single day and doing the work and putting it in, there's no doubt in my mind that that person one day can be CEO of the company they started for, or maybe they branch off and start their own thing. It's all possible if you're willing to do that work.
And I 100% agree with you. I mean, it's all about what you put in is what you get out. But if you're not going to put the time and energy into it, you're just not going to get out exactly what you want. And if you're ambitious, so not everybody is entrepreneurial. I think right. that's something inside of you that you want more. And there's nothing wrong with just working for another company mm-hmm. and not getting up to, you know, management level. You could still do well, as you even told me about a service technician who's doing well. How do you get people into the industry? So, and for the people that are listening, if I am 18, 19 years old, I'm hungry. I want to be in the trades and I want to be in this sort of sector into food equipment. How do you get into it? What does someone have to do?
It's one of those things. I think I talk about this over the years. You know, it's one of the, I feel like especially our industry is one of those things. You're either born into it or you just kind of fall into it some miraculous way. Thankfully I was born into it, but if you're sitting there, maybe you're a high school student, you're looking out the window and you're like, God, I can't wait to get out of this classroom and start my life. Right. Maybe I'm going to talk to that person. Start looking locally, because really the best thing I would recommend is, of course, you can go to a trade school, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Go get, you know, especially HVAC, go get your credentials, go get EPA certified, get that classroom knowledge. It is not, I will say, that is not real world knowledge. It's a completely different scenario, but those basics are a very good starting place. And then get locked in with a company. Now, Maliki is in New Jersey, but there's companies across the country that are looking for young men and women to join right now. And you're going to get paid to learn. In some markets, you might be paid $30,000 or $40,000 a year to learn instead of paying that out of pocket. And then what you're going to do is it's really good to get tied in with a CEFESA company, which is CFESA. That's the Commercial Food Equipment Service Association, and they have trainings down at their headquarters on the actual equipment that you're, as a technician, you're going to see out in the field, from the Hashizaki ice machines to the Altosham combi ovens to the Frymaster and Pitco fryers. All these things, they're going to be training on those things specific for the industry, because there's really no schools for that. So locking in with a company like ours across the country, there's hundreds if not thousands of them. They're willing to invest in the right individual. So I would say start Googling, start looking it up, go to trade schools, find out what companies are in the area, and just dive in. Don't be afraid.
A lot of companies today are, some of their complaints are they just can't find people. They can't find the right people. Yeah. They're having to go above and beyond offering wages. They have to give perks. What are you seeing in your industry? Is there a shortage of service technicians out there?
There is a tremendous shortage. And I think, you know, I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but I'll just say that there are a lot more people in all sectors of the trade, as I say, as a whole, going out and retiring than coming in. So it is, it's critical right now trying to find people to fill those seats in those vans to go out there and again, help people and fix equipment. It's a global thing, you know, and we need to fix it. We need to fix it fast. It's going to become a real issue. You know, one of those things down the line, like, hey, I need a plumber. Like, there's no plumbers left. What do I do? Those plumbers, it's going to be $500 an hour to get somebody there. I mean, so yeah, it's an issue.
I say this too, that in the next handful of years, the trades, whether it's electrician or a welder or a plumber, can charge 100 plus an hour, because at some point, and we're getting to that point where 40% are retiring, and not enough are coming in the next 5 or 10 years. So a lot of men and women are getting to that point. And an example would be, I had a dryer that busted, just went down, right? So there is somebody within our local neighborhood, everyone knows him, and he's the guy, and he's about 65, 66. He's the guy who comes in, he listens to us, and he says, I know what it is. Like, he just, he knows, he's the guy. And we got to talking, and he said to me, he's like, I don't understand. Nobody wants to take over for me. I have no debt. I make good money. I don't work that many hours. But what's going on here? Why wouldn't anybody want this? And he was baffled himself. So what happens is he retires, and who takes his place? And then you compound that by, like you said, you have a plumber and the shortage of plumbers. Well, I don't want to wait 4 weeks for a plumber. So for me, that's why I keep banging the drum about the trades, that in every single trade, they're all have some sort of shortage. And it's one thing to recruit, but it's also another thing to retain people in your organization. How do you retain the people that you have so they don't jump ship because they're making an extra $2 or $3, $5 more an hour somewhere else? How do you do that as an organization?
Yeah, that's something that we, you know, kind of go through here year in and year out. You know, it's one of those things you sit down and you figure out, you know, as a family business, you know, we don't have a lot of turnover. And I think a big reason of that is the leaders need to be there for their employees, right? This can't just be a place where it's a job, you clock in, you clock out. No, everybody knows my name. Everybody knows my number. That's super important. Staying in touch with everybody. On top of that, you have to have a benefits package, right? And that's another thing. I think that's a big perk of the trades. I mean, a lot of these companies have big benefit packages, and we currently pay 80% of a top tier plan for medical benefits. So we let them know that we're going to take care of you and your family, and we're working in the next 24 months, hopefully, to pay 100% of that. So when you come here, you're not just going to get that top pay rate. And listen, you've seen people over the years here. They'll go somewhere else for $1 or $2. Maybe those aren't the people you want anyway, you know, because if they're leaving for $1 or $2, you know, that doesn't fit in with our core values. I mean, we are here, you know, the money can come, the money could be there. So, you know, finding the right fit too. But the benefit packages, you know, every technician gets a van, they get a gas card, they get an easy pass, they get a smartphone, they get a tablet, they get a $200 a year allotment for pants and boots. I supply them on any kind of shirts, hats, hoodies, you name it, all year long. They need a specialty tool, company gets it. They have plenty of work-life balance with PTO, many, many weeks a year they have off, all the major holidays paid, including the day after Thanksgiving. They get a 4-day weekend with their family. You know, you have to continue to do these things. We have 2 weeks from now, we have a family day coming up. We rented out an entire park, camp area, pools and softball fields, and we're going to have all kinds of, you know, food and fun down there. We're getting, and then they get to bring their family. You know, this is, you know, more than just, you know, and I think if you want to retain people, good people, you got to go above and beyond. You got to show them that it's, you know, you're more than just a number. You're more than just someone generating revenue for a company. You know, you matter to us, and we're going to break bread together, and we're going to have fun together. We're going to have our Christmas dinner again, a big one, down at a hotel this year. We have awards that we give out. We have $5,000 plus in giveaways. You know, we have fun, and I think that's critical if you're going to build a company. And this doesn't even necessarily have to apply to the trade. It could be any business, I think. You know, if you want to keep good people, you got to do the right thing every day and provide more than just a paycheck.
Core values are so important.
Yeah.
And in our business at Toolfetch, it's hungry, humble, and smart. And those are the individuals we look for. Not smart, intelligent, but a team player. So emotionally smart. And if we don't have that, it typically doesn't work out, even though the person is a hard worker. So you need a balance of both. It needs to be the right fit for the seat and the right fit culturally. And I feel the younger generation is also looking for that it's not just the wage, because you can make a lot of money somewhere else, but you could be unhappy, right? You can wake up every day in a shitty mood and be like, I don't want to go to work, but the only thing that's keeping me there is the extra money. But companies that have a culture, they get recognition, they give recognition to their employees on top of training and mentorship. How important is mentorship in the trades?
Oh, I mean, that's probably second to none, especially when you look at the younger generation. You know, we have a couple of young guys that came up. I went and spoke at a high school, and we ended up getting their parents in the door here. We sat down. We said, listen, this is a legitimate career option. And out of the 60 or 70 kids I spoke to, I had two that were really interested, and we hired them. And fast forward about 4 years now, these kids are rocking. And the mentorship from the leaders that we have here that I consider leaders from our technicians, you know, cause that's where it all started. I mean, it started, that's where the rubber, you know, meets the road in the industry when a technician is going. He's going to ride with that senior tech on a daily basis, and they're going to impart to these young guys what it means. Cause these were 18-year-old kids. I mean, they're kids, and, you know, 18, you know, you go back, like, I was a kid at 18. I'm a man. No, you were a kid. Like, we were kids, right? And they're riding around, and these men are giving these young guys everything they have inside, not just the expertise on the equipment, but, you know, they're riding from job to job. We call it windshield time, and they're giving them stories, and they're, you know, having that back and forth talk, and they're really giving them something that you can't find in a book, that you can't find on a YouTube video. It's real life. And so the mentorship is so important early on for these young men and women that are going to be you know, who they want to be, you know, 5 years down the line. They have to see that. And, you know, having these senior techs that give them, you know, give them, so they don't have to, you know, that want to, and they do that. I mean, it sets the tone, I think, for their entire career. So it's super important.
Yeah. And being humble, right? So providing that, I could see some veterans maybe looking at the newbies and saying, well, I'm feeling threatened here. Like there's a new person, there's a new guy, girl who's coming on board. But if I am 30 years in and this is just my perspective, I was new too at some point, right? And I would have wanted that when I started. So that you got to take into consideration when a newbie is reaching out, because they're looking for help. And it helps them, because if you have a coach or a mentor, you can shave off years of just falling in these traps and going the wrong direction. And that's one thing I made a mistake as a younger kid. I didn't have a coach until much later on, and I should have, and I probably wouldn't have gone in different directions. It would have got me more narrowly focused. And I feel that's the same in the trades, by having somebody who's going to give their time to give their knowledge to a younger individual. Because what happens when they retire? They take all their knowledge and boom, it's gone. I don't want to say it's selfish, but it's just, why not share it with others, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the truth. I mean, if they go off into the sunset and they take all those years of experience, those are the things that you can't find those things somewhere. You know, you talked about, I walk in and I hear the dryer and I know what it needs. Reminds me of a story. And I don't know if it's a Henry Ford thing. My father had told me about it years ago. It's like, the car broke down and he just got it. And the customer calls up and says, Henry, it won't start. Come in. I'll be there in the morning. So Henry gets there. He opens up the hood. He looks at it. He takes his hammer out. He bangs the engine block. Start the car. It starts. He's like, wow, thanks, Henry. Week later, the Pony Express, right, delivers the invoice of $100. Customer calls Henry angry. What do you give $100? What are you talking about? All you did was bang the engine. He's like, oh, no, sir. He said, you're not paying me for banging the engine block. You're paying me for knowing where to bang the engine block.
Right.
You know, and that's the knowledge that these guys have. They could walk in and they could hear things and see things. And I see it all the time in the field with our techs. They'll walk in and they'll hear, like, oh, that's the actual fan. That's the convection. They just know. So it's so important we have these men and women that are moving on to the next chapter of their life, that we get some of that for the new generation.
The entrepreneurial journey. So you grew up in this business, and obviously I want to know a little bit more about your business and your background, but you came up in this business and you had to start somewhere. And then you had to eventually make yourself, or at least transition over to more of a management role, right? How did you do that? Is it something you just kind of learned? Because a lot of people listening are thinking, well, maybe I want to make that entrepreneurial leap, but what kind of skill set do I need? Where do I get help in that sense? Do I just figure it out myself? What was it like in your journey?
So you know, we are in the commercial restaurant equipment space for service. We service commercial cooking, refrigeration, dishwashing, food prep equipment. You know, we're servicing national chains, you know, mom and pop restaurants, stadiums, assisted livings, correctional facilities, hospitals, you know, anywhere food is being prepared, right? So that's the core business. And my father started the business back in, you know, the early 80s. And I was, you know, I was a baby, I was a kid. And, you know, finally, when I got to high school, I graduated in 1999. And I was going to go to college because that's what my father wanted. And truth be told, school was never for me. So I ended up dropping out of college. And but I did skip. So I was working in the business since I'm 12 years old. He had me breaking boxes and stuff like that. Right. But after high school, I really started getting involved more. Jumped into the parts department. I was doing that from about 18 to 22. I was on the road fixing equipment with some of the other senior technicians, and I was changing convection motors and fry pots, and I was doing installations. So for about 4 years, I was doing that, along with working in the office, doing stuff in parts, stuff like that, kind of a combination. And then it kind of came to the realization around 23 or 24 that I really liked the business side of this, and I wanted to come off the road full time, and I wanted to be in the office, and I wanted to learn more from my father and what he was doing, running the service department, you know, dispatching and scheduling, and just all the art of growing the business from the sales and marketing, all the whole gambit, right? And so I did that. I did just that, and I ended up, you know, I was in the billing department, I was in the parts department, I was in the service department. I had wore many hats. Before the internet, you know, we had walls of books on the wall of all the parts breakdowns and diagrams. So I learned a lot about equipment just from schematics and drawings and stuff like that. And, you know, family business. My father was very tough to work with. So, you know, how somebody else can learn. I think everyone's journey is probably going to be different from that entrepreneurial drive and that entrepreneurial journey. For me, you know, growing up in the family business with my father, he was the be all end all. You know, I used to sit there at 26, 27, 20, as I'm getting older, I'm saying, how in the world am I going to fill this man's shoes? Because I hear him, I see him. I'm like, I am not that guy. I mean, he's tough and he gets things done and people respect him. How am I going to get to that point? And I just finally came to the realization probably in my early 30s, which is, you know, about a decade ago at this point. And I said, you know what? I need to be my own guy. I need to stop worrying about what my dad did. You know, he's the reason I get to be here. So I'm gonna start doing my own thing. And I got in touch with the guys. I got in touch with manufacturers. I started going to conferences. I started going to shows. I started to slowly build that confidence and break out of my shell and get out there in the world, because that's a big component of entrepreneurship. You have to be willing to not be the wallflower. You have to get out there. You have to shake hands. You have to talk to people. You have to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. That's where you're going to grow the most, right? You're going to grow way outside your comfort zones where you're going to grow. Getting on stages and talking to people. Never thought I could do that. Did that in front of hundreds of people over the last few years. And it's one of those things that are going to connect you and open doors to new opportunities you never knew existed. So every journey is going to be different. But again, if you're willing to do the work and you're willing to break outside that comfort zone, you can do anything.
Yeah, you need to walk in those shoes, right? Before you become a business owner. You can't just pop down in, you know, and be CEO. It doesn't work, because you can't, you're relatable to the people that work for you because you were there. Because someone can't tell you and say, hey, Rich, you don't know shit. You know, you didn't do that. And you're like, yeah, I did. I did that for years. So you've wore many hats, and I've done this too in my journey too. I've wore customer service from accounting to sales before, you know, look, I started off as a business owner, but I had to feel it out. I do feel that, and this is just my journey. I joined a group called Vistage, and Vistage is a group of CEOs and executives that meet on a monthly basis. So you have people in different industries, and you have a speaker, and you get to learn about culture or sales or something like that. On top of, you're talking with other people in other industries, and they're like an extension of your board. And basically, they're telling you straight to your face, no, you're wrong. Like, you don't get that as an owner, because are your employees really going to do that? No, they're probably going to hold back. But these individuals are like, no. You know, this is not right, Andrew. So I'm a big believer of joining some sort of mastermind, a group, like you said, you're going to conferences, you're speaking to other people, but you have to be willing to do that. Because if you weren't, and you didn't have the fire in the belly, it wouldn't work. But you took that yourself and made it happen. You didn't, maybe your father had the conversation, but I don't think he forced your hand. I think you had the fire in the belly. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, and it's funny too, because my father always said, you know, growing up, he said, son, you have to have the fire in the belly for this. If you don't have it, you're never going to make it. You know, he used to say that all the time. And he did. He pushed me. Believe me, he pushed me. There was no sleep. Even as far as there's no sleeping in my house, there was blankets being ripped off at 6 a.m. every day in the summer when I was 13. Get up. You know, I mean, it was constant pushing, even through the business. You know, he introduced me to Cefesa and going to conferences. But I think, yeah, I mean, I took the big leap in really getting involved, you know, and I think that's, you know, whoever's out there, you know, you have to be willing to put yourself out there and into these places to meet people. It's all about people. It's all about relationships and being willing. You said Vistage. That just came on my radar recently from an industry friend looking into that. And yeah, because, you know, you don't need yes men in your life. You need people that are going to tell you the truth. That's how you're going to grow.
100%. I totally agree with you. How tough in family business, right? You grew up in a family business. I co-own the business with my brother, so I know family dynamics. My uncle and my father were in business together, and I saw the good, the bad, the ugly. How do you keep family live? Because there are people who have family businesses, and you hear all different stories. How do you balance out both? So when you're having family dinner on Thanksgiving, you're not talking about business. You're just, you know, personal stuff. How do you balance both? And are you able to do it?
Man, I'll tell you. I'll start from growing up in the business. There, you know, and that kind of would be like the reason my father and I have the relationship we have now, which is not great, but conversation for another day. But all we did was talk about business. That was all it was. You know, it was, you know, vacation. If he made it to a vacation, because he was working. If he made it to vacations, if we're sitting across the table at birthdays or Thanksgivings or Christmas, it was just minimal. It was like, hey, Rich, how about those New York Giants? Oh yeah. All right. So listen, let's talk about how we're going to tackle Monday. And I'm like, I don't want to. And even I'm like, I don't want to talk about this right now. I'm like, my mom is making pasta. There's meatballs coming out. I'm like, I let's save the business for when it's time for business. And it really got in the way of so many things. For me, you fast forward, I think, and the pandemic probably helped change and shape this a little bit, because I was definitely becoming guilty of it as well. But now, no, I don't want to talk about business. You know, my sister has two boys, you know, my nephews, and I don't want to be at Thanksgiving dinner or at the pool in the summer and we're chopping it up. I'm like, no, I want to enjoy the family. I want to enjoy watching these kids, and I want to be the fun uncle, right? I don't want to be this guy, because you start talking about business, no, you can get serious, you can get all kinds of emotions going. And I'm not saying it doesn't come up from time to time, but if it does, it's usually pretty light and exciting talk of what to come. So I and it's not easy. So if you're in a family business dynamic, I know it's not easy, and There are ways. It's just, hey, listen, you know what? Let's talk about this later, you and me. Sometimes you have to diffuse the situation if you have like a father or a mother that's running it, just because you need to have that separation. If you don't, it really can consume you, and it cannot you know, end well. So not easy.
Yeah, I traveled down that road and being business with my brother for about 23 years. So one thing that helped us in our business as we developed the business, we brought in what's called EOS management, which is a blueprint for your business. There's a few different things out there. There's EMIT, there's EOS management. There's a few different management, you know, ecosystems that you can build into the business. And that allowed us to really kind of separate out our roles. You know, one person is the visionary, one person is more in the day-to-day, one person is seeing the future, and structured our meetings. And they're timed, and this whole, you know, finding our core values, finding our core focus, where we're going 1 year, 3 year, 10 year, really kind of put things into perspective. So the people that are listening, if you are struggling, you know, you hit a wall in your business and you just can't break through that wall, like a revenue, if it's revenue or it's something within the business, That's where like an EOS management comes in and really refocuses your efforts. And now we're doing scaling the business a lot quicker and promoting accountability into the business, and communication is just like off the charts.
Yeah, no, it's important. You know, to have those, you know, talking about core values, I mean, to, you know, have everybody, you know, buying into those core values, it's important, and to give everybody a voice. So yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah. So what type of advice would you have, as we wrap up, what type of advice would you give somebody, right now? Again, you touched on it a little bit, but again, somebody is 18, 19 years old and is thinking about college. And look, college is not for everybody. I went to college for 4 years, and I always say this, I was more lost when I came out than when I was in. And I just shifted around from major to major. And I had a life-changing event on 9/11 when I was down helping tradespeople and emergency workers on Ground Zero a couple of days after the incident, which took me from an IT guy to a tool guy. So I have a very different journey. But some, what do you say to the younger generation who's thinking about college, but versus sort of a trades path? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say that the stigma that the trades are second rate are you've been sold a line of BS. This for me, and I've kind of, I guess I'll say I coined this phrase. It's not, we're not blue collar, we're not white collar, we're gold collar, right? There's a level here of highly intelligent people that are solving problems for people. I think Mike Rowe has a quote that, you know, the people of the trades are the ones that make civilized lives possible. You know, we're all walking around, electricity works, the plumbing works, everything, the HVAC, we're comfortable. These things don't just happen. There's people behind the scenes. Even getting that steak to your table, like our technicians out here, there might have been a service technician fixing that charbroiler for you to get that steak, you know. And these are people's livelihoods at stake. We're keeping the people and the economy moving. So I would say to that 18, 19 year old, or even somebody that wants to do a career change, listen, I'm not gonna, you know, age people out. I'm 41. If there's a 41 year old guy or girl out there saying I need something different, the one thing I will say is, and I've said this again, you have to be willing to work. There is the commitment here. There's a commitment to yourself first of understanding the knowledge you're going to have to attain. You know, this takes time. You know, just like anything, people want that instant gratification. There's no such thing. I'm here to tell you, there's no such thing as an overnight success. It's going to take years. So if you're willing to say, you know what, I want to learn this trade because I know that it's going to be here forever. I know I'm going to have stability. I know I can go anywhere in the world with my capabilities that I learn over the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You want to start in New Jersey? One day you say, you know what? I think I want to move to Canada. You know, I think I want to go. All I got to do is make a phone call to XYZ. I know all these companies. We're all interconnected. You're going to have a place to go to continue your career in that instant. So understand that this is a large scale type of play. And yeah, the money's going to come. All right. The money's going to come. The benefits are going to be there. At the end of the day, the most rewarding thing I think you'll find from a lot of the technicians is they walk in and they just feel good. It's like that Superman. You know, they come in, this stuff's down. They come in, it's working. These big combi ovens, these big $40,000, $50,000 units, it's back working. It's back online. The chefs are cooking. People are eating. Business is being done. There's a gratification and a reward that's beyond money. When you're finding solutions, your help. This is an industry, and all the trades really are industries of helping people. So if you love helping people, if you love making money, if you want to write your own ticket, if you want to travel, if you want to do all the things that are in your mind that you think, oh, I don't know how I'm going to do it, it's all here. And I guarantee you, I'm living it. So the possibilities are endless as long as you are willing to work for it.
Perfect example, as you said, about it's never too late. I have a family member, and he's in his early 30s, and he's been working for a supermarket chain in California. Completely, not even like corporate white-collar job, right? He wants to be an electrician. He's making that shift, and I'm sort of helping him through that. But it's never too late that you start off maybe white collar. I call him blue collar with a white stripe. That's what I coin it. As you have your coin for, and just remind me, it was gold.
Yes.
What was it again?
Yeah, gold collar. Yeah.
Gold collar. I love it. We're coining these phrases. Yes. That he's going to go that route, and I all the power to him, and I think he's going to do really well. And look, he's got to start from the bottom, but he's willing to put the time and effort in. So it's, I don't think it's ever really, really too late. And look, you can always blend both from blue collar to white collar or white collar to blue collar. There's never, absolutely, it's never really too late.
It's not. It really isn't. You know, when you think, oh, like we always hear life is short. And I guess in reality, you know, if we have 100 years to live and we're lucky, life is short, but it's also long, you know. You put in some time in your early 30s. By the time you're 40, you're there if you dedicated yourself. And now you got your 40s and your 50s and your 60s and your, I mean, there's a lot of life. So you're never out of the game. It's never over. There is time if you're willing to put it in. And listen, the calendar pages are going to rip off whether you start something or not. So you might as well start.
Might as well be happy.
That's right.
Rich, so where would people find you? I just want to let people know out there. Where would you find you out there online?
Everywhere. You can go to youtube.com/MalikiTV. You can go find me on social media at Rich Malachy, RichMalachy. You can find me. I'm on LinkedIn, TikTok, everywhere. And then you could also find their company at Malachy Cares. Everywhere. And if you're interested in checking out MalachyCares.com/careers, you can see what we offer if you're in the New Jersey, New York City market.
Good stuff, Rich. Well, thank you having you today. It's good to get your perspective on the trades. And I wish you obviously the best of luck in your journey and what you're doing. And thank you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast.
Sure. Nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.